Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring online privacy, personal information, and data sharing. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. So I am really excited to get into this today because we often operate under this this incredibly persistent illusion of digital anonymity.
Oh, yeah. That illusion is strong.
Right. Like you sit alone in your living room, you're scrolling on your phone, and it just feels totally private.
It feels like it's just you and the screen.
Exactly. But the reality is that knowing just four random locations you've visited in a given day is statistically enough to uniquely identify 95% of the population.
Yeah, that stat usually shatters that illusion pretty fast.
It really does.
Because, you know, people tend to focus on the really obvious identifiers, things like handing over a driver's license or typing in your social security number.
Sure, the stuff you know you're giving away.
Right. But the digital world doesn't actually need your name to know exactly who you are.
Wow. Okay, let's unpack this a little bit. We need to distinguish between direct personal information, which we instinctively guard, well, indirect personal information, which we sort of just hemorrhage constantly without even realizing it.
Hemorrhage is the right word for it, honestly.
Yeah, I look at it less like leaving a deliberate trail of breadcrumbs and more like you're shedding digital DNA.
I like that.
Because if you drop a breadcrumb, you chose to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
But every single time your browser asks a website to load, it automatically hands over this highly specific resume.
Yeah, it really does.
It gives away your screen resolution, your exact operating system version, the specific fonts you have installed.
Even your time zone and your device's IP address.
Yes. All of it.
And that entire mechanism, it's known as browser fingerprinting. Platforms also look at how your specific graphics card renders hidden elements on the page.
Wait, really? Your graphics card?
Oh, yeah. And when you aggregate all those microscopic data points, they form a completely unique hash.
That is wild.
Because that specific combination of hardware and software is just so uniquely yours. So the platform, they don't need a login or a cookie to know it's you coming back to the site. They just read the fingerprint.
Which means the old defense of, you know, I have nothing to hide because my data is boring, that completely falls apart.
That really does.
Because I hear that pushback all the time. People assume that because they aren't, like, a secret agent, no one cares what they're doing. So why do these platforms want my boring, everyday data? I'm not a secret agent.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the platforms aren't manually reading your emails to see what you had for lunch.
Right.
They are feeding your indirect footprint into these massive behavioral models. The value isn't in your individual isolated actions.
Okay, so where is the value?
The value is in predictive modeling.
Mm.
This ties directly into the concepts we see in the age of surveillance capitalism and future crimes.
Yeah, those are great references.
Yeah, right. When data brokers aggregate your digital DNA with millions of other people, they can map out incredibly sophisticated patterns of human behavior.
So they're predicting what we're going to do before we even do it.
Exactly. They learn that a specific indirect profile correlates with, say, a high likelihood of making a spontaneous purchase late at night.
Oh, guilty as charged.
Right. Or perhaps a vulnerability to certain types of political messaging. It's incredibly powerful.
You know, I was reading about a classic case study that illustrates just how dangerous this aggregation is, even when companies claim they're playing by the rules.
Oh, the Netflix one.
Yes. Years ago, Netflix released this massive data set of user movie ratings. The goal was to let independent developers improve their recommendation algorithm.
Right, but they anonymized the data first,
yeah,
supposedly.
Exactly. They stripped out all the names and the user IDs,
mm-hmm,
leaving only the movie title, the star rating, and the timestamp of when the user rated it.
Sounds pretty safe on the surface.
You would think.
Yeah.
But researchers were able to de-anonymize the data almost immediately.
Yeah, that was a huge wake-up call for the industry.
It was crazy. They simply cross-referenced those anonymous Netflix ratings with public reviews posted on IMDb.
Because people tend to review movies on both platforms around the exact same time.
Right, so matching the timestamps and the ratings linked that anonymous profile right back to the highly public IMDb profile,
mm-hmm,
exposing the person's entire private viewing history.
And that de-anonymization, it basically proves that stripping direct identifiers doesn't protect you at all if the indirect data is rich enough.
So true.
Your data is essentially a form of high-value currency. The platforms are highly incentivized to extract as much of it as possible to train these predictive models.
Which means we need to stop being passive about our privacy settings.
Right.
We need to move into, like, a defensive posture.
Absolutely. Once you internalize that your everyday routine is raw material for a multi-billion-dollar industry, you look at your phone a lot differently.
You really do. And here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at mobile app permissions, because this is where the theoretical risk kind of hits the pavement.
Good point.
The lesson highlights a real-world case study of a student who just audited their mobile apps. And they dramatically reduced their privacy risks just by turning off unnecessary location tracking.
Right. And notice the student didn't need to learn advanced cryptography or anything.
Not at all.
They just needed to audit their endpoint permissions. The big issue we face is that most people operate on this this set-and-forget-it mentality.
Totally. You download an app, click accept on a giant wall of text, and you just grant system-level permissions permanently. Like, why does a basic flashlight app need access to my GPS location?
Exactly. It makes no sense. And we also assume that if we are using an encrypted messaging app, we're totally safe.
Right, because of the encryption.
But encryption only protects data in transit.
Right.
If you grant a third-party custom keyboard app full access to your operating system.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, it can capture your keystrokes before the messaging app ever even gets the chance to scramble them. The endpoint permission completely bypasses the encryption.
Man, that is just a huge core vulnerability.
It really is. You also have to consider the downstream effects of those permissions. Consider the fitness tracking app, Strava.
Oh, I remember this story.
Yeah, a few years ago, they published this really beautiful, globally anonymized heat map showing where all their users were running and cycling.
It looked like a glowing map of global exercise habits. It was super cool.
It was cool until military analysts realized that the map was glowing in the middle of supposedly empty deserts in combat zones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Military personnel were going for their daily jogs around classified forward operating bases with their fitness trackers turned on.
So by granting location permissions to a fitness app,
they inadvertently broadcast the exact perimeter and patrol routes of highly classified military installations to the entire world.
That is terrifying. But it perfectly illustrates why building these personal habits of checking permissions isn't just about protecting your own weekend plans.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually a training ground for professional responsibility. Because as you move into digitally integrated workplaces, privacy awareness just becomes a fundamental operational requirement.
So true. The workplace application here is critical. We are talking about the impact of data misuse and the catastrophic loss of trust that follows.
Yeah. So what does this all mean for a young professional today?
Well, this raises an important question. Employers today operate in environments with incredibly strict data compliance regulations. They expect you to possess an inherent understanding of digital boundaries.
Let's play out a realistic scenario then. Say you're a young professional stepping into a new role. You're managing sensitive company data or confidential client files.
Okay.
You've got your enterprise environment on your device. But you still have that personal set-it-and-forget-it mindset. So you find a third-party AI scheduling assistant or some flashy calendar app to help you organize your meetings.
Right. We've all been tempted by those productivity tools. And to make that app work, it asks you to authenticate using your corporate Microsoft 365 or your Google Workspace account.
Right. It uses an OAuth token.
Exactly.
And you click allow, thinking, you know, it's just going to read my calendar to find some free time.
But you didn't check the specific API scopes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You actually just granted a persistent token that gives a completely unvetted third-party startup read and write access to your entire corporate contact list.
Yeah. Like
your emails and your shared enterprise drive.
That is just shadow IT in a nutshell. You bypass the company's entire security architecture just for some convenience.
And think about the fallout. If that third-party startup experiences a data breach, your entire client database goes down with them.
That's not just an uncomfortable meeting with HR.
No, it represents severe legal liabilities, massive security risks, and a total loss of trust from the clients whose data you failed to protect.
Which means employers are desperate to hire people who already have strong privacy awareness. It shows that you actually understand the stakes of responsible technology use.
Right. If you have the discipline to lock down your personal data, employers have the confidence that you will apply that exact same rigor to theirs.
That shifts privacy from being this, like, tedious personal chore to a much broader ethical responsibility.
You are acting as a safeguard for the entire ecosystem you operate within.
I always think about how people justify oversharing online. you know, granting endless background app permissions or giving every random e-commerce site your persistent location data.
It happens all the time.
It's essentially like giving every vendor in a shopping mall a permanent live feed to your home security cameras just because you bought a shirt from them once.
That is a perfect metaphor. You are exposing the entire household. And in the digital world, that household includes your contacts, your employer, and literally anyone tagged in your metadata.
Yeah. Strong privacy awareness is basically a form of collective digital safety. When you think critically, before granting an app access, you are actively reducing the attack surface for everyone connected to you.
Exactly.
Okay, so the stakes are super clear. We need to sever these persistent connections. We need to be safeguards.
Yes, we do.
So let's translate this into actionable momentum for you listening right now. Instead of just listing off software, let's look at how the tools highlighted in our lesson actually solve the structural problems we've been discussing.
Good idea. Well, we established earlier that cross-site tracking and browser fingerprinting are the primary mechanisms for building those behavioral profiles.
Right.
To combat that, the lesson points to the DuckDuckGo privacy browser.
Yeah, because if the goal is to sever the link between your different digital activities, DuckDuckGo natively blocks those third-party trackers.
Exactly.
It stops the social media plugin on some news website from reporting back to headquarters that you just read an article about, say, healthcare. It structurally prevents the aggregation.
It limits the indirect information you broadcast. But, you know, you also have to manage the data you've intentionally given to platforms you actually use.
Right, the direct stuff.
Yeah. This is where tools like the Google Privacy Checkup come into play. Because it addresses the server-side retention of your data.
Because even if you block third-party trackers, Google still knows what you search for on Google.
Exactly. The privacy checkup is crucial because it takes you out of the passive role. It forces you to actually look at your YouTube history, your location timeline, and your ad personalization profile.
And it gives you the toggle to enforce auto-deletion. That's the best part. You can tell the server to wipe that data every 3 months so it doesn't just sit there indefinitely as a liability.
It's all about enforcing data minimization. And for securing the gateway to all this information, the lesson really emphasizes password managers, specifically mentioning Bitwarden.
Which makes sense, since we all know humans are biologically terrible at generating the kind of mathematical entropy required for a strong password. We just use our pet's name and a number.
Yeah, pretty much. So leaning on a manager is a necessity. But the reason Bitwarden is so critical ties back to what we discussed about encryption. It uses a zero-knowledge architecture.
Can you break that down real quick?
Sure. The cryptography happens locally on your specific device. So when your vault syncs to Bitwarden servers, it only sends ciphertext.
Meaning, if Bitwarden servers get breached tomorrow, the hackers don't get your passwords.
Nope.
They just get a useless pile of mathematical noise.
Exactly. The company literally has zero knowledge of your actual data. Utilizing zero-knowledge architecture isn't just a convenience. It's a structural necessity to compartmentalize breaches.
Right. If your pizza app gets hacked, they don't get the password to your bank account.
Exactly. And applying these tools significantly upgrades your digital posture. But tools are really only as effective as the mindset wielding them.
Very true.
To bridge that gap, I highly recommend engaging with the practical application activity outlined in this lesson. Sometime today, just choose one single app or social platform you use regularly and perform a targeted audit.
I love this advice. But seriously, don't try to audit your whole digital life in one afternoon, or you'll just get overwhelmed and quit. Just pick one app.
Just one. Identify the specific information it collects, both direct and indirect.
Okay.
Scrutinize the current privacy settings. And based on what we've discussed about API access and tracking, map out the potential sharing risks. Then execute the necessary improvements right there on your device to restrict that access.
I promise you, the moment you go into the settings of a basic utility app and realize it has had persistent access to your microphone and your contacts for 3 years.
In shock.
It is so jarring, but it's also deeply empowering. You realize you actually have the agency to turn the toggle off.
And building that agency is the ultimate objective here. We aren't trying to cultivate paranoia or discourage you from using technology.
No, not at all.
We are cultivating adaptability. The digital landscape is going to evolve. Data sharing practices, predictive modeling, and workplace integrations, they're only going to become more complex.
Absolutely. And by building a foundation of digital confidence right now, by understanding the mechanisms of how your data is collected and how to restrict it, You are actively future-proofing your skill set.
You'll know how to interrogate the privacy policies of platforms that haven't even been invented yet.
Exactly. It is a core competency for lifelong learning.
It really is. The lesson provides a very valuable reflection prompt to guide this ongoing process, which is, how can stronger privacy awareness help protect my personal information online?
That's a great question to sit with.
It is. As you reflect on that, consider how this awareness serves as a shield for both your personal life and your future professional environments.
So view privacy not as an obstacle to convenience, but as a deeply empowering skill. It is the boundary that allows you to safely leverage the power of the digital world.
Well said. And before we wrap up, I want to acknowledge the reference materials that shape the technical and theoretical foundations of this deep dive.
Yes, please.
The broader context regarding the monetization of data and the inherent risks of digital ecosystems draws from themes explored in The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Art of Invisibility, and Future Crimes.
Incredible resources. To everyone listening, my call to action for you today is to stay curious, stay responsible, and stay future ready. Don't let your digital DNA just drift out into the ecosystem. Take command of your footprint.
And please ensure you review your end-of-module study guide and complete the workbook activities associated with this lesson. It really helps solidify these concepts and practice these skills. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for listening. You have the tools, you understand the mechanisms, and you have the power to sweep up those digital breadcrumbs. See you next time.